This is Good Charity, Bad Charity. I'm David Prest.
I'm Keith Davis.
I'm Camilla McGiven.
We're here, we're back again. We've been feasting on things. Keith, you had a bit of an incident with the pork scratching, is that right?
Yeah, I did, and it was all the railway's fault. They were late.
Of course.
And, yeah. So I went to the pub and had a pint and waited, and I thought I was hungry. And I ended up at the dentist this morning.
With the pork scratching?
Yeah, because she was on...
Is it lodged in a molar or something?
Not graphic. Do we have to do graphic?
Camilla, you've been trying a Whitstable oyster.
I have. Oysters.
Oysters.
I mean, they get landed. We have an oyster festival in Whitstable.
This is, should we say, a small coastal town on the southeast of England, on the Kent coast.
On the Kent coast, yes.
You've been putting them down your throat a bit too dramatically because you've got a bit of a
I've got a bit of it, yeah. I could do with oysters.
Which is good. It's a good
slipping
rasp.
Down. I think Does it sound too much gin-like?
No, rasps are good.
Rasps are good.
We should hold on to that rasp. I've got a quiz. Here. I want you to name me, between you, the top characteristics or traits that are needed for recruitment of chief execs of charities.
I think the first one, and you know, we're all both going to get shot down here if we get some of these wrong, but is to understand clearly the values of the organisation.
Oh, we'll give you that one, Keith. Genuine engagement with the mission of the organisation.
Yes.
Is that okay?
Yep.
Right, you've got one. You've got four to get.
Honesty.
Honesty and integrity.
I think you have to say it because I've been in situations where people haven't said it and you think it's taken for granted, but it ain't.
Brilliant. Any more?
I think troubleshooting, maybe, and flexibility.
It's not on my list, but I'll give it to you.
Financial canniness.
Intellectual curiosity I've got here.
Well, that was my next.
So two other big ones we've got to get in today's world, what a charity needs to lead it.
They need someone who is committed to delivering a quality service at the end of the day.
Yeah,
to the customers.
Gives you a bit of...
They need dynamism.
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 Visionary, inspirational
leaders.
It's my
key word.
That's
dynamism.
One. And the final thing, which is particularly appropriate for us...
Team. Management.
Team
We're
management.
All about the team.
Almost. You're not quite there.
We
want strong communicators.
I think strong communication is very important.
Keith has got the answer just before the whistle blew. This is very much what our theme is today, because we're looking at how, having had all these great visionary people that we've been speaking to over previous episodes of this podcast, and people who are really involved nitty-gritty with the day-to-day basics of charity and getting it right, today we're turning the tables a bit, because we've got a guy who basically is on the other side of things. He has to find those people. Introduced to us by Camilla. So Camilla, give us a brief sketch of the person we've got coming up.
Kai Adams, who is in executive search, has just walked into the studio. We have communicated very effectively over choosing trustees, choosing CEOs. One of the things apparently he remembers me saying is that what happens if he cocks up? And really, my memory of that incident was what happens if I cock up? Because I'm a trustee choosing a CEO to run an organization that is going to be spending a lot of money, doing a lot of good, we hope. So what I'm looking for in somebody like Kai is a bit of hand-holding, a bit of support, a bit of concrete knowledge that he can impart and isn't worried about imparting, and yet the ability to stand back when he needs to and when I need to make that decision.
I think for me it's about the balance of the board. How do you get the balance of the board right? How do you get the working relationship between the chair and the chief exec, and then the relationship between the chair and the trustees working? Because it's a dynamic that will break or make that whole charity sector work.
And how do you get under the skin of the people that are in front of you and that then will be in front of the trustees for their decision-making? How do we know that that person who sits across the table giving us a very good spiel isn't just giving us a very good spiel?
In a way, I'm intrigued by the difference between what I perceive the headhunting world to be, very corporate, very hard-nosed, very pinstriped, and how that maps onto the perhaps more soft, fuzzy, gentle approach that charities might want to take. So it's an interesting area, I think.
It is an interesting area, but I don't think some of the operational stuff is soft and fluffy.
Okay.
You know, you've got to run a charity as a business. Therefore, you need someone that has the capability to deliver a good one. And Camilla's point is right. How do you drill down to say that the person actually just isn't giving you a load of waffle?
Lots to talk about. Let's get Kai Adams in. Kai Adams is a partner at the London-based recruitment firm of Green Park, where he's part of the charities and social enterprise practice, and his recruitment specialism is diversity. As for what makes a good trustee, Kai is a huge fan of Julia Unwin, the former chief exec of the Joseph Rowntree Foundation, who has five S's: supporting and scrutinising the executive team, stretching a charity's ambition, stewardship, protecting the organisation in the long term, and devising strategy. So fantastic thumbnail sketch of what's needed. I'm going to ask Kai what word beginning with the letter S first drew him into the charity sector.
Well, I think I would have to go with the stewardship.
Yeah.
I think it's about how organisations, in this case charities, engage with their multiple audiences, whether it's their supporters, their donors, their commissioners, their volunteers. And I think that plays in very neatly to the work that Green Park does around diversity and inclusivity when we're talking about the widest possible audience, not just the usual, but also the unusual suspects.
You have a really enlightened take on it in a way, in that diversity for some people is just the colour of people's skin. You're looking much more broadly.
That's right. So we would look at it in terms of both the visible and the invisible characteristics. We have the protected characteristics, which you've mentioned there. But also we think about how people think about diversity, the cognitive diversity, if you like. Let's say, for example, I have a client that says we have predominantly male and white board, and I want gender and ethnocultural diversity around the table. We can go and deliver that from a visual standpoint. It may or may not be easy, but we can go and deliver that. If, however, those people that we bring on board don't help that board to subsequently ask different questions, reach more creative and more innovative solutions, then we haven't really delivered anything other than visual diversity.
This is the interesting bit about who you have on the board that throws that brick into the middle of the pond. And I think the challenge to a chief exec or a chair is to have the skill to be open and honest and manage some of that process. Now, have you seen in the past people get over that barrier of saying, I'm not going to have someone like that because, you know, all they're going to do is cause hell for me in the boardroom?
Yeah, undoubtedly. We have a good many clients who say to us, as we have embarked on bringing in people who challenge us and think differently to us, let alone the visual diversity, just the kind of getting people who think differently, the process has at least initially been very uncomfortable. And has led to probably more tensions and more difficulties.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But those same ones that say it was difficult at first then subsequently report that it's got far, far better in the organisation. And by the way, I'm talking public, private and voluntary. It's important then to think about when you're recruiting, have you got somebody who is thinking outside the box, or have you got someone that's standing well outside the tent? The former is fine, the latter is probably quite unhelpful.
Yeah.
How do you approach, broadly speaking, mm-hmm. the challenge of finding the right people for that organisation that comes through your door?
You're right, it is a tough challenge, so we have to think about it very carefully from the very first moment we engage, and that's even at the pitch stage. And as I think Camilla was mentioning earlier, our first involvement together was a pretty stretching and rigorous process where Camilla and a couple of her colleagues pushed my colleague Jamie and me to answer some really difficult questions about our potential lack of success, how we'd go about that. And so I think I'm right in saying, Camilla, that as a first point, we have to approach all this work with real authenticity and a degree of humility. I think the reason we got through was because we didn't fudge a very difficult answer.
Yeah, but it wasn't just that. It's quite simple things, Kai, I think, and I think this goes across board for any interview. So when you came into the room, and I can see it now, you came with a partner who was female. So now we already have a bit of diversity. Not everybody did, and I think we interviewed 6 different organisations. You took time to listen to the question, and when each of you spoke, as each of you did, it wasn't clear and hugely obvious who was the boss and who wasn't the boss. And I've sat through some where people have talked over each other, and the hierarchical approach, which I am so not interested, was very, very clear. And I guess what I want to know is, from your side of the table, you're looking at me as a trustee who'd never done this before. Are you sitting there thinking, how do I deal with this woman? Are you thinking, do I actually want the business? Because is this the kind of organization I want to work with? Or are you just thinking it's another job?
I'd be a liar if I didn't say there was a little element of all of that that flashes through your mind at some point. But you mentioned my colleague, Jamie. Jamie has been instrumental in building our practice from what it was in 2011, which was no business whatsoever. Green Park didn't do anything in charities, to a practice that now has 75% repeat business. And Jamie has been absolutely fundamental in that. And in some ways, it's because we are yin and yang. We get on phenomenally well. But I'm more of a worrier, more of a pessimist, as she would say. I'm more of the cerebral type. Jamie is instinct. She's wisdom. She's practicality. And so the two of us bounce off each other well. So when we are in those scenarios that you describe, Camilla, we have two frames of reference, or two ways of thinking about the problem. And of course, I've got my boss Raj in my ear somewhere, like Jiminy Cricket on my shoulder, saying, it's another job, win it. But actually, it's also about, as my dad used to say to me, you shouldn't just listen in order to reply. You know, you should be listening in order to understand.
What about the aftercare, as it were? What does success look like from your point of view? Somebody who stays for 3 years, do you put a timeline on it?
It's not so much a timeline, but if I can answer it from a diversity and inclusion perspective, just for a moment, although that's not everything I do, but I was very struck by a conversation I had with an individual about 2 months ago, who talked about the fact that she was on a couple of boards. And this woman is relatively young, she's Asian, and she's female. All right, so had been put onto 2 boards and said, one of them's fantastic, I get to contribute, the other is a nightmare, the other is toxic. Her words, not mine. And when we said, what do you mean? She said, well, I got on because they said they wanted greater representation, in this case visible representation. But once I'm on, no one listens to me. And unfortunately, she's not the first to say this and not the last. She just happens to be probably the most eloquent, and she also happens to be one of the most talented people I've met in a long, long time. So I think there is a bit about, as my boss would say, it's not just about getting someone into an organisation, it's about helping them get on in the organisation.
I know there's one particular charity that you've worked with who came to you, I think, with a fairly overt message that they needed very obvious visual diversity on their board, and you actually took the decision, quite a bold decision, to sort of put it out there that that's what you were looking for directly. And that's quite an interesting thing to do in 2018.
Indeed. The one that I've talked about most commonly, and the one that we discussed, was with English Heritage. Yeah. And what I liked about that was the humility of the organisation to say, we are still working on this, we're very new in this agenda and we want to get better, but we're, my words, not theirs, not very good at it yet. And so there was a humility there. There was also an authenticity that said, when we go out, we're not just looking for, in this case, BAME representation. That's the outcome, if you like. But actually what we're looking for are people who are representative of different heritages, different stories, different narratives in England. Therefore, making people think differently about the mental image we often have about English heritage.
Yeah. Going back then, as we're talking about the board as such, who were trying to appoint, and in this stage I'm talking about appointing a chief exec, say, that relationship between the chair and the chief exec is so intrinsically important. Okay, how do you go about getting the understanding about what that organisation needs for the fitability for either the chair or the chief exec? Mm.
It's not easy. I think a lot of it is trying to immerse yourself as much as possible in the organisation, which is why I like to talk to a variety of stakeholders. A big bit of what headhunting is science, kind of the process, if you like, the hoops people have to go through, the competency interviewing, the assessments and so on. A big bit of it's art as well. It's the you spend so much time with people that you start to intuit who is going to work well with whom. I think it's also about trying to encourage our client, let's take the chair appointing a chief exec because that's clearly far more common. It's about understanding what that individual feels is going to help their organisation flourish. And therefore understanding the chair's behaviour, the chair's stance, if you like, their values, and then working out to what extent do they need to complement those versus to what extent do they want to contrast those.
And then you start saying, right, we need to put some psychometric testing in try and develop that, to say, you know, are they really, you know, this end or that end of this continuum? I know you use them on occasions, yep. Most of them do. What are the benefits? What are the dangers?
Well, in some ways, they're one and the same. So the benefits are another triangulation point, because any stage that is added should be exactly that, additive to your information gathering. The risk is that too often, I think, psychometrics get used to say, well, let's just do it. Think about why you're using them. And I'm a big fan, and I've got a psychology degree and all the rest of it, but it has to be well thought through. I think the psychometrics also, it's truth be told, they can only measure about 25% of performance. Mm. So in the same way as an interview only measures about 25-26% of performance, so the psychometric. So you're not really covering all the ground unless you add them one on top of another.
So 25% you're saying you've got on psychos, 25% you've got on the other end of that. So all you're left with then is gut reaction.
Well, there's lots of elements to it. But gut reaction, I think, does play a part. Let's face it, human beings, we're making up our mind as we walk through the door.
Yeah. But then you've got somebody like me, whose bottom line is, do I believe in the cause and do I like the folks? And you can do your psychometrics up the wazoo, and I'd be like, well...
She had to get it in.
I had to get it in. And it's very much... Do I think this person will fit in? If I had to analyze, I think that the thing is, Keith, you have to say, what are the components of a gut reaction?
Yeah.
Because you can't stand up in a crowded room and say, this person's got it and this person hasn't. That's why we're going to choose them. But that's what we're talking about.
And what you have to add to that, I think, is, and what I would encourage all our clients, whatever sector, to be thinking about, and Green Park, is that sense of being unconscious bias. So understanding, getting ourselves more confident with what we're bringing into that room, so that you're not just appointing either in your image or conversely trying to get as far away from your own image as possible in order to satisfy a particular need. It's, as Andy Haldane said in a very interesting article, there's a kind of a portfolio theory that goes in there as well. You've got to understand not just... what you're appointing right now, but how it will change the dynamic of everyone else in that room.
So you have to get really deep down and dirty almost. When we first started talking with you, you were one of the first persons we talked to about this podcast. Mm. In, I guess, the 2 years since we started thinking about it, more of the bad charities come to the fore. Why would a CEO go into a CEO charity position, or why would a person who is eminently qualified in other arenas go in? And is it harder for you to persuade these people that the charity sector is a vibrant, exciting organization in a way that I think 2 years ago you wouldn't have actually had to say that?
I almost make it a sort of woe is me if I say, yes, it's become more difficult. But it has to a degree.
It has, I'm sure.
In a funny way, particularly the chief executive, in a funny way, whilst it is more difficult, and we're certainly seeing maybe a small reduction in people from outside the sector thinking about joining, I actually think, conversely, it's about saying how difficult it is. It's about prioritizing the fact that to be a chief executive, you need to be bold, you need to be comfortable with ambiguity, you need to understand that the market is hugely volatile. And when you talk to people about that kind of thing, that's precisely what excites them. Then the filter is this person naive or gung-ho, or have they really yes. got a good understanding of what they're letting themselves into?
Do you believe, though, that the quality of candidates that you can supply to the charity sector is now becoming slightly diminished because of the nagging worry that people might get caught up in something that was not necessarily of their
making? Don't think the quality is diminished. I think the pipeline, if you like, the conduit through which those candidates are coming to the sector is narrower than it should be. And therefore, my peers, my competitors and I, what we need to work harder at is widening that pipeline again and getting people to see that the impact the sector can have in ways that no other sector can have is there for all to see.
How much does money come into it when you have done a lot of hand-holding and whatever? Is somebody saying, well, fundamentally, I'm coming from the private sector, for example, I'm going to the charitable sector, which is vastly underpaid by comparison. Is it never a deciding factor? Is it sometimes?
It is sometimes. But I'm a great believer in, A, having the money conversation as early as you can, at least in terms of broad parameters, and then spending most of the conversation around why the hell they should take this job, because it's such an amazing job to take. Now, you can always spill over into salesmanship then, and you get someone who doesn't actually want to do it, and we push them over. But I think I'd be giving myself and my team too much credit if I said we could change someone's mind. The money is probably more of an impediment right at the outset, when people think, I've not even been approached, I'll either go for it or not. Once they're in a conversation with us, we find that there's ways to bridge the gap, which is about the weight of the role, the excitement of the role and the other things. And if we can't close that, then it's better to do it early on and say, let's keep talking about other things, but now we know that you have a predisposition to make the move. It's just this one maybe not the right one to do.
And does it sometimes work in the other way? Do you sometimes get people from the commercial world who've made their piles of money and are then thinking about their legacy in the future, and they don't want to be seen as just somebody who acquired piles of money? They want to have done some good at the end of the day and find me a little charity to work with. I'd love to do something for betterment for society. I mean, how on earth do you get round that? How do you approach
You've clearly
that
been
conversation?
In my office too often. I think there's a place for a degree of scepticism and cynicism, and still to use that to the advantage of the sector, quite honestly.
He said skeptically.
I think if people want to do that, then let's have them as part of the conversation. But I would hope, and I believe, that the team and I would challenge them on that and say, well, actually, my client, if you sit there and say, I just want to give something back, and that's the sum total of your motivation, I think you're going to struggle.
I think that you're right. Yeah. I mean, that legacy bit really grinds me, I have to say. And I think if you're not careful, you migrate to a different delivery programme than the charity or wherever started with, because you're satisfying a individual's personal need rather than the charity's mission from day one. Yeah. And I think that's I'm on my high horse there.
I
think
that's, I agree with you.
That's awesome. Going back to, you talked about the market shortening or thinning from there. What skills are missing from your point of view at the moment out there?
I'm going to try not to answer it from the deficit position, because I think all the skills are there. It's about what's in great demand, particularly interestingly around chief exec positions, will be the commercial, call it what you will, fundraising set of skills. So the kind of the money side of things, how do you make us long-term viable and sustainable? That's one set of skills. Another pool of chief exec candidates are coming up from the strong brand, marketing, communication skills are important. And of course, the Venn diagram will have people in the middle. I think almost all my clients will say to me, whether it's turnkey, turnaround or transformation, we need change agents. Then I think in terms of perhaps more technical remits, we're undoubtedly seeing a growth in digital skills. We're seeing more and more interest in data and insight, and we're seeing a lot more around broadly defining customer journey.
Lots of people listening to this podcast will probably be thinking, well, I quite like the challenge of being a trustee. I'm interested in being a trustee. What would you say to them in terms of what they need, but also in terms of how they put their hand up?
Well, in terms of putting their hand up, you've already said that I work at Green Park and we're easily enough to find,
okay.
And we're not
so we
the tube,
email
and we
direct,
don't find people's brollies, which is what we get called up for a lot. So they're welcome to come and talk to us or drop us a line. In terms of where else they can look, well, I think it's still true that something like 60% of people's portfolio comes from their own networks. And I would always say to people, be very open, particularly because there's not a conflict of interest, be very open with your own networks that you're looking. And maybe a little bit of sleight of hand or sleight of mind is that you're not saying to someone, help me find a job, which frankly then becomes onerous for the person you're asking the favour from, but you say to them, you know all my skills, all my experience, all my energy. Who else do you think might benefit from those? And all of a sudden, the person you're asking has a reflective glory of introducing someone smart to another organisation.
Yeah.
I just want to ask you one final question. Sure. Rather than where do you think you'll be in 10 years' time, I want to ask you, where do you think leadership, the concept of leadership in the charity sector, will be in 10 years' time? I don't know if you use the word charisma, but charisma is bandied around quite a lot.
Well, first of all, I'd say that I think the sector is less turned on by that kind of charismatic description that it might
be. You have a filter, a charisma filter. That's a bit unfair,
but so you know, and that, by the way, there's plenty of charismatic leaders out there. But I think the type of leadership we're seeing is much less presidential, much less kind of ambassadorial than it once was. It's much less the figure, the voice of the sector. And I have this conversation with quite a few people. I think it's much more the co-productive, collaborative, cross-boundary leadership we're seeing now. And whether it's charisma or not, or gravitas or not, it's not a word I particularly like either, it is about the presence to make those things happen. And my sense is the sector's moving much more to that and away from the grip and grin leadership that it maybe once had before.
So less, in a way, less presidential, less, I think you're all great, you're doing a great job, and who are these people getting in my way?
That's my sense. That's my sense.
Mr. Adams, I think it's safe to say that you've got the job as far as we're concerned. It's been a really interesting insight into how you work. Kai Adams, thank you very much.
My pleasure, thank you.
It's been great, thank you.
So we've been listening to Kai Adams, a recruitment consultant working in the charity sector, and some real wow moments, I think, from both of you. And I'm intrigued to have a face and somebody to put flesh on the bones, as it were, for this kind of slightly murky world, I think, for someone like me. What did you feel?
For me, I thought Kai was totally open and honest with us. He's addressed a number of the issues for me that we've lived with for years. And for people out there listening to this, some ideas about how they need to be pre-prepared before they start to go into appointing a chief exec or appointing a chairman.
We started out by talking about five things that he looks for in a CEO, and we were supposed to have a guessing contest. But for me, five things that come out of Kai is he is brave. He is kind. These are my values, as it were, that I'm always looking for anybody that I want to have a relationship with. He has curiosity. And I think when you're curious, you're a much better listener because you actually want to hear what the other person says. And he demonstrates that in our conversation today. He's honest. And I think he cares hugely about the sector. He cares about people. He cares about placing them in positions where they will be happy.
And I think that's right. And I think what he came up for me with was banging on the head some of these skills that those people need from day one, you know, that skill to listen, to understand, not just to think that you're listening because that's what you should be doing. And then the relationship with the chair and the chief exec, and for him, saying what he needs to understand is what behaviours both of those are going to play into before they appoint, so that you get that blend of working better together rather than what you can get, and I've seen it, this clash.
I think he digs deep, Keith. I think in everything that he does, Kai has a methodology, an approach that is designed to elicit it, and he's quite clear what it is.
And actually, his approach is almost a lesson in itself, a masterclass in itself, isn't it?
Exactly.
Because it's not necessarily using his services or his company, but you know, the chief exec looking to recruit somebody, or the person looking to find a key individual to fill a hole in their staffing organization. They've got to have that sort of gimlet-eyed, calm, forensic, almost psychoanalytic approach to things, haven't they, in a way?
Yes, and it's about having that passion that isn't shouty. That is somehow right down in the DNA. What I'd like people to take away and think about is, why should I not be a trustee? This sounds like a really interesting place to be.
Thank you very much, Keith, Camilla. This has been Good Charity, Bad Charity on all the available platforms. Dan Hardoon is our producer here at Whistledown Studios. Donate support. Go and have a look at our website, goodcharitybadcharity.com. Credit in full to the manufacturers of pork scratchings and the good people of Whitstable. From Good Charity, Bad Charity, goodbye. My name's David Prest.
My name's Keith Davis.
My name's Camilla McGibbon.
Next time.